Jeff Hutchison, ABC Radio Perth.
Whenever the social demographer Hugh McKay writes a book, he asks lots of questions of the reader. What matters to you? Are you living the kind of life you want? Would you like it to be better? And he urges us not to let go of those questions because of his lifelong belief that better lives, better communities can be built through kindness. And in his latest book, he offers a bit of a guide to get there. It's called The Kindness Revolution: How We Can Restore Hope, Rebuild Trust, and Inspire Optimism. Hugh, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Jeff. Lovely to be back on the program.
Always nice to have you on the wireless. I tell you what, there are many years of accumulated wisdom and kindness in this book, Hugh McKay. Is this the distillation of everything else you've ever written?
Well, it's pretty much in that direction, Jeff. In fact, when the publisher showed me their back cover blurb and it included the phrase, the distillation of Hugh McKay's life's work, I said, hang on, I'm not dead yet. But it is that. And I think it's very likely that I won't write another non-fiction book, certainly not another one in this, based on social research and social analysis like this. So it is a kind of swan song for non-fiction, and it is a distillation. I have brought back in to this book some of the themes from my earlier work, particularly about community development, the art of belonging, what makes us tick, the good listener. Various books are echoed in this book, because what I was trying to do, Jeff, was look at the starting point, the sort of catalyst for this book was 2020. And partly that I had 6 months of nothing else to do except write a book, so sure. I thought, here I go. But also, what an incredible... I mean, I really encourage you and people who are listening to this conversation just to pause for a moment and consider what an incredible lesson we all learned in 2020. First of all, from the fires, and then from the pandemic, the extent to which, not always immediately and not always spontaneously, but almost universally, we recognize that we would have to make personal sacrifices for the common good, that we would have to give up some things we wanted to do, travel, buy shopping, whatever it might be, change aspects of our lives. And in the case of the bushfires, of course, pitch in and help people who'd lost their homes, livelihoods, all that sort of stuff. It was just one of those examples on a very large scale of how disruptions, crises, catastrophes, whether societal or even personal, like a life-threatening illness or a relationship breakdown or a bereavement, these things are terrible when we're going through them. They are disruptions. They cause all sorts of distress in the short term. And generally speaking, they help us to clarify our values, to reorder our priorities. Often people look back on these events in their lives and say it was the making of us.
Yeah.
It really
I mean, I find think. That I find that great clarity in your observation that the lessons we learn from adversity are more compelling and more enduring than those we learn from pleasure and happiness. So there can be an upside to troubled times. But you also say, and I know you've said this before too, don't wait for the next disaster. And don't yes. wait for government to take the initiative, because this all starts much closer to home.
Yeah, that in what you just said there, Jeff, you've captured the absolute essence of my message in this book, which is when we dream of a better Australia, there's no doubt about the sort of things we include in that dream. We do dream of a kinder society, of a more tolerant place, a more inclusive place, a more compassionate place, a more mutually respectful place. No one dreams of the future. No one says, gee, I wish we could be a bit more violent or a bit more competitive, or couldn't we get a bit more hate? No one in their right mind would dream of that. We dream of all those positive things. I think it would be, now that we've had such a dramatic experience through the fires followed by the pandemic, it would be an absolute tragedy if we let all this go and then just said, oh, well, now we'll go back to how it used to be, and wasted the lessons that this crisis has taught us. It's taught us We had an opportunity for much more introspection than we normally engage in, partly because we were at home and nowhere to go and not much to do except think about things for some people. I mean, if you were working from home and homeschooling three kids, it was a high-stress period, I realise that. But for many people, it was a time of much more introspection and reflection. I think we've just got to acknowledge that if we want to become that kind of place, we've got this magic moment when we've already been disrupted. People are now talking about the new normal. And I think the important word in that is new. You know, we don't want to go back to a life in which we were a bit too individualistic, a bit too materialistic, in which we were a bit too busy, a bit too stressed, constantly filling up our time with things and stuff. We don't want to go back to that. We want to edge towards this better future, this better society. But as you say, we can't rely on someone else. There's no magic wand. The government is not going to do it for us.
No, but one thing about it, and if you've just joined me, my guest this afternoon is Hugh McKay, the author of The Kindness Revolution. One thing about it, Hugh, is that you talk about our shared humanity, and you observe that we were born to cooperate and not compete. And you support that idea by inviting us to sort of consider the kindness of our everyday interactions. You make a great case for saying a better version of ourselves is reminding ourselves the level to which we do care and help others.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think the greatest asset that the human species has is our innate capacity for kindness. It's built into it. We're hardwired for it. We've got a cooperative center in the brain, the neuroscientists now tell us. And so it's not surprising that when you think, oh, the state of the world, oh, the state of politics, oh, you know, what are we going to do, et cetera, wring our hands, roll our eyes. Yes, there's a lot of nasty stuff. There's a lot of violence. There's a lot of ugly behavior. But just think about all the other stuff. Think about the people who just without a second thought will help someone out of a jam. Total strangers. What an incredible capacity humans have, this thing we call kindness to strangers, people we don't even know, may never see again, yet we'll go out of our way to help them if they need a hand, or you know, coaching a footy team of disadvantaged kids, or volunteering as a firefighter or a surf lifesaver. Or
are we not placing coaching enough value on these things here? Do we just get so used to it and have an expectation that I'll do it if there's something in it for me, perhaps, but we don't truly celebrate it for what it is, and that's the someone giving of themselves for the benefit of others without seeking, you know, reward and recognition, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. Not that I think we want to start, bragging about it. And by the way, I'm sure when you start hearing your listeners' stories, they're going to be mostly stories of kindness that was received. You know, people don't like brag. They say, hey, gee, I was really kind. Look how I helped that old lady across the road. Or look how I mowed the neighbor's lawn because he was feeling crook or something. This is just natural for us. You know, this is not newsworthy. What's newsworthy is when people do pass by someone in the street who's obviously distressed, or who never get to know their neighbours, and you know, the neighbour dies and it's 3 months before anyone realises they're dead. That makes the news. What's absolutely natural for us and not newsworthy is to be kind, considerate, compassionate, tolerant towards each other. That's us at our best. But I think you're right. Every now and then, let's pause. Let's celebrate it. Let's acknowledge that that's what Abraham Lincoln referred to as the better angels of our nature. Let the better angels prevail.
On ABC Radio Perth this afternoon, you're listening to Hugh McKay, the author of The Kindness Revolution. I'd like to go to one chapter that I was really engaged by, and perhaps because it relates to my own work, and it's called Everyone's Deepest Need is to be Heard. And in it, you say that, you know, listening is one of the most precious gifts we can give each other. And of course, that's a reminder to me, and it should be to everyone, the need to sort of set aside our prejudices and preconceptions. It's the only way, it seems to me, to get out of our silos of entrenched opinion. And one thing that you say that I really like is attentive listening involves postponing the question of whether you happen to like what you're hearing, whether you agree with it, or whether you're capable of responding sympathetically. Receive before you respond. That's a good lesson for all of us, Hugh. Me included, well, I promise.
Well, you are good at it, Jeff. I mean, I don't want to sound as if I'm flattering you, but you are remarkable in your profession. There's a small handful of people like you who really are, you know, broadcasters who people think are born to talk. But, of course, listening is a major part of the communication. And I'm very glad you focused on this point, because I think if we wanted to transform our society person by person, relationship by relationship, street by street, school by school, workplace by workplace, the first thing we'd have to do is pay more attention to our capacity for attentive and empathic listening. Because, as you said, it's the greatest gift we ever give each other. It's the gift that says more eloquently than anything else we ever do, I am taking you seriously as a person. I'm acknowledging you. I'm appreciating you to the extent that I'm prepared to listen to what you have to say. But, of course, the shadow cast by that is, if I don't listen, what I'm saying to you without having to put it into words is, sorry, I don't value you enough to bother listening. You know, would you ever say that explicitly to a partner or to a child? Of course not. And yet when we don't listen, or listen with sort of half of our attention and none of our empathy, we are effectively saying, sorry, I don't value you.
So here's a tough one, and I don't know if you can answer this. How do we find kindness then, even if we feel that we've been wronged or we're resentful or we're outraged? Does sort of the word forgiveness get included there somewhere as well?
Absolutely. I think we are. In fact, I think there's a sort of a holy trinity when it comes to our relationships of expressions of kindness. One is the one we've just been talking about, our willingness to listen with attention and empathy to another person, even if we don't like what we're hearing. The second one is our willingness to apologize when we know we've wronged someone. Mm-hmm. People who feel as though it's kind of their religion never to apologize, I just cannot grasp that. I mean, if you've hurt or offended someone, even unintentionally, surely the sign that you give them, that you take them seriously as a person, the expression of your innate kindness is you apologize. And if you apologize, what you desperately then hope for is that you'll be forgiven. And as a person who's been wronged, we might even, and I know many examples of people famous in history and unknown in my own circle and people I've encountered, we're capable of forgiving even when the person who's hurt us or wronged us has not apologized. And that's a mark of an absolutely civilized person for whom, I mean, the thing about kindness is that it's not dependent on our emotions, Jeff. It's not something, it's not about affection. Samuel Johnson, 250 years ago, wrote something that I don't agree with everything Samuel Johnson wrote by any means, but he wrote something very wise when he said, kindness is in our power even when fondness is not. In other words, you don't have to like someone in order to act kindly toward you. You don't have to like someone in order to apologize. You don't have to like someone in order to forgive them for something they've done. It's just an expression of this noblest of all human qualities, our capacity to show kindness, even to do tough things kindly. You can terminate a relationship kindly and respectfully. You can fire an employee kindly and respectfully. I mean, it's tough, but we've got that capacity, and everything can be softened. Everything can be made more civilized by the exercise of kindness.
Hugh McKay, I intend to keep talking to you on a regular basis, whether you're writing books or not. I know also that you write fiction as well, but I'll leave it there for now. But it is always my great pleasure to talk to you, because it seems so calm and so humane, and they're qualities that we all benefit from. So for now, thank you very much for talking to me.
Great pleasure as always. Thanks very much, Jeff.
Hugh McKay is the author of The Kindness Revolution.
Driving Perth Home. Jeff Hutchison. 3:30 weekdays on ABC Radio Perth.